We have all heard the expression, I'm the captain of my own life, my own boat. I have my destiny in my hands. That is fine. It is true to an extent, and it can happen to any of us. But for us to be a master of our own destiny, where we can dictate how our life goes, there's a threshold that we have to attain. In the scriptures, here's what we learned. Everything in the heavens and earth glorifies God. He is the mighty, the wise one. He has sovereign control over the heavens and the earth. He gives lives and brings death. He has power over all things. He is the first and the last, the outward and the inward. He has knowledge of all things. It was He who created the heavens and earth in 6 days and then ascended the throne. He knows what enters the earth and what comes out of it. What descends from the sky and what ascends to it. He is with you wherever you are. He sees all that you do. He has sovereignty over the heavens and the earth. All affairs will return to God. He causes the night to pass into the day and the day to pass into the night. And He knows all that is in the hearts of men and women. Have faith in God and His messenger and spend in charity, of which He has made you trustees. So, what could be your reason for not believing in God? That's from the Quran. In the chapter they call Ayon, Al Hadid. That is chapter 57. If God is within us, that means we have the power to be able to dictate how things goes. Because that power of God is the one who is doing it for us. But in the Christian scriptures, book of Jeremiah, chapter 1, verse 5, it says, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations. It signifies God's preemptive knowledge and purpose for Jeremiah. We are the Jeremiahs. It speaks to God's sovereign plan and His intimate knowledge of individuals even before their physical existence. And God has chosen each person for a specific purpose. So you can imagine if God has chosen you to do something and you choose not to, it complicates one's life. And when God has really chosen for you to do something, you cannot go against it. Jesus was meant to be who He is and to go that way. He couldn't change that. And so there are certain things that are supposed to happen to us. You cannot change that. So if you think you are master of your destiny, well, there's something they call faith, F-A-T-E, which determines, and part of what determines that is also the way we've lived our life. As soon as you realize you have been born a human being, you have everything to fear. There seems to be no escape. No matter what precautions you take, there's always missteps somewhere. That tells us we're not perfect. Your only security is in God. Whether you are in the African jungle or at war or racked by disease and poverty, just say to the Lord and believe, I am in the armored car of your presence. Moving across the battlefield of life, I am protected. That's why we say it is well with us. There is no other way to be safe. Use common sense and trust fully in God. We're not suggesting something eccentric. We're urging you to affirm and believe, no matter what happens in this truth, Lord, it is you, you alone who can help me. Because once you take the physical body, there are certain things you can say you are master of your destiny, you cannot change. So many are falling into ruts of disease and wrong habits and have not pulled themselves out. That's where the predetermined faith happens. Because your karma goes along where you are. And it doesn't mean you won't create another one while you are here. But never say you cannot escape. Your misfortune is only for a time. The failure of one life is not the measure of whether or not you are a success. The attitude of the conquering person or man is being unafraid. I am a child of God. I have nothing to fear. So fear nothing. Life and death are only different processes of your consciousness. Everything the Lord has created is to try us, to bring out the buried and immortality within us. That is the adventure of life, the one purpose of life. And everyone's adventure is different, unique. You should be prepared to deal with all problems of health, mind, and soul by common sense methods and faith in God. Knowing that in life or death, your soul remains unconquered. You can never die. No weapon can pierce the soul. No fire can burn it. No water can moisten it. Nor can any wind wither it. The soul is immutable, all-permeating, ever calm, and immovable. You are eternally the image of spirit. Is it not freeing to the mind to know that death cannot kill us? When disease comes and the body stops working, the soul thinks, I'm dead. But the Lord shakes the soul and says, what is the matter with you? You are not dead. Are you not still thinking? So how can you be dead if you are still thinking, even though your body has collapsed? A soldier is walking along and a bomb shatters his body. His soul cries, oh, I am killed, Lord. And God says, of course not. Are you not talking to me? Nothing can destroy you. My child, you are dreaming. Then the soul realizes, This is not so terrible. It was only my temporary earth-life consciousness of being a physical body that made losing it seem the end of me. I had forgotten that I am the eternal soul. True yogis or saints, when you've attained that, are able to control the mind under all circumstances. When that perfection is reached, you are free. That's when you can say, I can control my destiny. Then you know life is a divine adventure. Jesus and other great souls have proven this. You will finish this life adventure only when you conquer its dangers by your willpower and mind power, as did the great ones. Then you will look back and say, Lord, it was a pretty bad experience. I came near failing, but now I am in the safety of your presence forever. We can see life as a wonderful adventure when the Lord finally says, all those terrifying experiences are over. I'm with you evermore. Nothing can harm you. Men and women, we are playing at life like a child. But as our mind grows stronger, through fighting sickness and troubles, anything that weakens our mind is our greatest enemy. And whatever strengthens your mind is your heavy. Laugh at any trouble that comes. Know you are everlasting in the Lord. I didn't say that. That's Yogananda talking. Now I'm going to share a story to round this up so that you will get the import of what we are saying. Are we master of our own destiny, or is there a predetermined fate? Frabado awoke in his hotel room. Deeply concerned about the direction of history, mankind's chronic inability to envision positive thoughts, because that's always our issue, you know, and transform them into deeds was becoming even more widespread. Political persecution, coupled with torture and murder, had become the order of the day and will soon lead to an orgy of destruction. We're talking way back then, and we're seeing it the same now. That is repeating itself, isn't it? With his spiritual eyes, Frabado could see the course of events to come in the Akasha. But the immutable laws of silence did not permit him to discuss such matters in public. When you get to that level, there are certain things spirit will reveal to you. You are not supposed to talk about it. But most people won't even understand why you don't want to talk. Because some, when you do talk, it will frighten the heck out of them. So you zip your mouth and pretend like you didn't say it, and silently you ask God for blessings to turn things around. His own faith, F-A-T-E, too, will take a tragic turn, and he will not be allowed to use his spiritual powers to alter his destiny. For every being in the universe is bound by the laws of karma. Even when you don't have karma, Jesus didn't have karma, but he was not allowed to use the spiritual power where he woke up the dead and kicked the demons to death. No. That was predetermined. But But those in the know don't talk. Those who don't know, they talk, you know, and you just like, okay. But he felt some consolation, though, in the fact that divine providence would sustain him during his time of persecution. Everybody has their cross to carry. That's why Redbone Yogananda said, you cannot be afraid of what life brings. The life that brings challenges also brings peace and also brings blessings of prosperity. He knew he was protected by the Brothers of Light in order that he might carry out his mission on earth. There are certain protections that each of us has when what God has really determines for us, their purpose must be carried out. You can throw tantrums, "I don't want to do this." And you can go and run in front of a car, the car won't kill you. You can step on a mine, it won't blow up because you are still meant. And we've seen it. That little boy, what, 2 years old, who got lost where, you know, the mountain lions and all of that. He wasn't this time. There are things he needed to fulfill, so nothing can kill him. To walk 7 miles, I mean 2 year olds. And there are other instances we've read about. Even an animal cannot be killed if it's not this time. That's why you see a lioness protect a goat. Even though normally, under normal circumstances, that would be snatched. To rid himself of these depressing thoughts, because even the holy ones, when they get there, when they see what's going to happen, like, "Oh God, help," because that's the only way we can get out of this. "I'm yet to read or met anyone in spirit or in physical form who have attained certain heights, who, when they see what is coming, unless they don't have that compassion, that empathy, yeah, it talks at their heart. To rid himself of this depressing thought, he took refuge for some minutes in a special meditation." That's why we do this. When things are not going your way, find yourself back and go meditate on God and ask for God's grace, mercy, and blessings to help you. Whatever it is, if you ask, you will receive. If you knock, the door will be open. If you don't ask, you're just delaying, you know, your own torture. Then he had a bath and shortly after was left the hotel quite refreshed. So I'm going to skip some of this. So Fravado chose a restaurant. Even holy people, they have to eat. And Bosu managed on a quiet side street for his breakfast. At the next table, three gentlemen were engaged in lively conversation. Contrary to his usual habit, Frabado took up a newspaper to familiarize himself with his new surroundings. He was in no hurry. As of yet, he had no plans for the future. Because something has just happened to him where he escaped, you know, so that may be another story for another time. While reading his paper, he overheard some of the conversation at the next table, especially because one of the three people talking one of the three gentlemen was explaining his views rather loudly and enthusiastically. Frabado's interest was suddenly aroused as he realized that metaphysics and Spiritism considered the subject matter of their conversation. Some of us, we get excited when we hear people talking about God. It's like, oh, this is great. He proceeded to watch the three men inconspicuously, though without making use of his clairvoyance, where you can see things. And he deduced that one of the gentlemen was a scientist, whereas the other two appeared to be businessmen. After listening to their opinions for a few moments, he was unable to suppress a smile at the way so many confused and quite incorrect ideas had been mixed together. One of the men happened to look in Frabado's direction and notice his indulgent smile. Because some of us will do that. When you know the Spirit of God is guiding you and you know the truth has been told to you and the wisdom is there, when you hear others talking things that are not, you know, you just smile like it. Because it's like a parent who knows, okay, this child doesn't know what he's talking about. And sometimes that's how I've met some of you. Because Spirit said, go talk to that one, that child, I have a plan for that one. But they don't know what they are really talking about, you know. One of the men happened to look in Frappado's direction and noticed his indulgent smile. For a moment, the man was unable to make up his mind between two possibilities. Either this smiling gentleman at the next table knew more about the subject of conversation than the speakers themselves, or he thought the entire topic a mere nonsense. They say chimera. Is that how they pronounce it? C-H-I-M-E-R-A. Chimera. Finally, he decided that the former was the case, despite the fact that Frabado's appearance did not allow for any definite conclusions. He looked like an average person, a man in the street. That's what Spirit wants of us. The more you know, the less you run your mouth. The less you draw attention to yourself. Unless Spirit says, okay, we want you to then that's when you reveal thyself. Those who know, those who say they know, they don't know. Those who say they don't know, they don't know. The one who knows is not talking. Wisdom keeps his company. And Frabado is showcasing that right now. During a short pause in the conversation, the man who had been watching Frabado whispered something to his friends. The other two looked at Frabado and then nodded. The first gentleman got up at once and approached Frabado's table. Pardon my disturbing you, sir. Well, it will appear that you are an expert in the spirit ways. You know more about the spirit life. May I therefore invite you to join in our conversation? My name is Momo K. Divine. Shekinah, you know, and all. Say, my name is Kay, and I'm a manufacturer of optical instruments. Frabado accepted the invitation in a friendly manner. Having introduced himself, he sat down at the neighboring table. Mr. Kay introduced his partners, Mr. P, a bank manager, and Professor G, a doctor of chemistry. The professor was unable to control his curiosity. Mr. Frabado, are you not the clairvoyant and spirit person about whom so many papers have been reporting for some time now? If that is indeed the case, then I must regard it as my good fortune to meet you here. Frabado now realized that he could not remain unnoticed in this city, nodded to the professor saying, yes, I'm the one you have read about in the papers. Yes, you really are lucky to meet me here. For strictly speaking, my presence here is rather involuntary. It's not like he wanted to be there. I did not intend to laugh at you, but some of your views on metaphysics are not exactly correct. Of course, the gentleman wanted to know why Frabado had come to the city involuntarily. He told them the whole story. In other words, they were going to kill him. He just ran away from the German side, you know. That would be another day for the story. It's quite interesting. You know, he barely made it with his life. Even with that kind of spiritual height, yeah, we're tested according to what God and what level we are. He told them the whole story, and shocked, they promised to help him as much as they could. They all invited him to their homes, and since he had no fixed plans, he decided to dedicate the following 3 nights to his new acquaintances, new friends. One of the evenings would involve a small celebration with a few friends. Frabado took it as an act of faith, F-A-T-E, and benevolently agreed. As a matter of fact, he later found so much support in this circle that he was able to overcome his desperate situation. First, the gentleman asked many questions about the spiritual phenomena, which Frabado answered as clearly as possible. However, he pointed out that there was a great deal of knowledge in the field, which could only reveal itself to a real practitioner. You don't meditate, there are things you will not get. You can't do God by reading books alone. That's just the way, there are things you would not be able to discern in a book. Meditation leads you to the revelations of the divine glorious ways. That's why we encourage people, pray, meditate. Let me repeat that. He pointed out that there was a great deal of knowledge in the field which could only reveal itself to a real practitioner. The three men soon admitted that they had been seeing many things in the wrong light. After 2 hours had passed, they began to discuss the problem of faith, F-A-T-E. The professor was of the opinion that there was no such thing as predetermined faith, but that man was the architect of his own destiny. And we've heard that. People say that. Although the professor gave good reasons for his views, Frabado responded with amused laughter. It's like what parents will do when you hear the kid, Professor, he said, a person must travel quite a ways along the spiritual path and attain a certain maturity in his development before he can become the master of his own faith. Moreover, he must be able to sustain that maturity under all possible circumstances. So it's not just for one time. And that's why the wisdom of God, we need to connect to that wisdom constantly, the joy, the wisdom, that spirit within us, the intuition. Some of us, there are things in the past we're not able to do. Now we're able to do it. And it must constantly evolve itself. We must live what we know. To repeat that, one must attain spiritual, astral, and physical equilibrium if one wishes to take the reins of his destiny into his own hands. If you think you have reached such a level of maturity and can determine your fate yourself, I shall give you a small demonstration of the influence of destiny upon man. Because the professor thing, because he's a professor and all of that, yes. I'm master of my own destiny. No God can change anything. There was a pause. The three gentlemen stared at Frabado, astounded. One could see from the professor's expression that he was very disturbed. He didn't like what he heard, because all this time he's believed in that. He had always set the tone in this small group, and after somewhat demoted, Frabado noticed this and said benevolently. And that's why we must never be rooted in our ego. Spirit will reveal things to us because that's all we can handle. And then when Spirit says something else, because now we can, don't say, well, but Spirit told me this. Are you going to stick to that, or are you going to stick to the new things they are revealing to you? Sometimes it looks contradictory, but as you expand, you find that there is no contradiction. So Frabado talked to him in a nice way. Let's put it this way. I do not wish to deny that you have a great deal of theoretical knowledge. You have read much, even in foreign languages. You have a large library and you have been publishing articles on metaphysics in different foreign magazines, which has given you a name as something of an authority. But in occult science, there is a great difference between mere knowledge and practical know-how. We must never be the empty barrels that makes the loudest noise. The professor was quite surprised what Frabido knew about him. Curious, he replied, "Mr. Frabido, if what you say is true, I should be very pleased to see you produce any evidence of the influence of destiny." Lost into Frabido gazed ahead. His faraway eyes had assumed a peculiar stare. His consciousness was clearly not focused upon his immediate surroundings. This condition only lasted a short time. Then Frabido blinked his eye as if awakening from a deep sleep, smiled at the professor and said, "I have just been looking into your future with my spiritual eye. With the help of a small event, I shall prove to you the influence of faith. If you are not anywhere near the Pulver Tower at midnight tonight, you would have proven that you are able to master your faith. Let us wait and see if it is within your powers to resist your destiny." The professor's expression exuded irony and arrogance as he retorted, "I will wager everything that I will. I will wager anything that I will not be able at the Pulver Tower at midnight." He was ready to bet everything that, "Well, you don't know what you're talking about. I will not be there." Of course, when you are in a spiritual state, you don't argue, you know. You know what Frida said, so they can tell you, just say, "Okay." Frabido pretended not to hear these words and changed the subject by confirming the dates of his invitation. Everyone had another glass of wine they all took to and left. When he left the restaurant and climbed into a taxi, Professor G felt rather peculiar. For a bachelor, he lived in high style. He lived in a big villa, had a number of servants. You can see how that has, you know, poured into his ego. His versatile research was one reason for his being alone. Well, let's skip all of that. So he got home. He was not able to free himself from the bad mood which had beset him at the restaurant shortly before the end of the conversation. He would never have admitted, though, that his offended self-conceit was the cause of his mood. His ego was really bruised. What sort of man was Frabido, he wondered. During their initial meeting, Frabido had been able to describe many details of the professor's home. It was as if he had already been there. The professor said, "This Frabido will prove to be incorrect tonight. I know I'm the master of my own fate, and I'm going to prove him wrong. I will show him that I'm the master of my destiny. I shall make great effort not to leave my home against this evening." So he decided to stay in bed the whole time, no matter what happened. What a satisfaction it would be for him to prove that Frabido was wrong. His own self-esteem would grow, and apart from that, he will verify the validity of his philosophical opinions. When it comes to God, our ego must be sat on. We must flush it down the toilet. He looked at his watch, it was 3 p.m., but his stomach was grumbling, as we know if you haven't eaten, so he went to have lunch. His mind was really upset, so he couldn't concentrate. He wanted to do some work. He couldn't because his ego has been bruised. At 5 p.m., we're still occupied with Frabido. He's still thinking of him. I guess Frabido has a free rent. How do they put that in his head? So he wanted to go to bed so that then he can sleep till the next morning to prove that, you know, this will not happen. But he was nervous and all of that, and he turned and he couldn't sleep. Then one of his servants knocked at his door to inform him that a party of well-known artists had come to visit him, and they were waiting in the foyer because he had good connections in the world and all of that. His visitors, I think they've been drinking, so they were in a very cheery mood. So when the servant returned to inform that the professor was not feeling well and therefore had gone to bed early, they could not be kept back, but literally stormed into his room. "What is the matter with you, old boy, creeping into bed at this time of the day?" "You are not ill. You need a little change," one of the visitors exclaimed, a man well known for his witty humor who was never short of words. The artist badgered the professor, constantly attempting to persuade him to get out of bed. Since there was no sign of illness, the professor was in a weak position and eventually had to get dressed. In the meantime, his visitors made themselves comfortable in the living room, and the professor had no choice but to offer a few bottles of wine because of his long-standing friendship with them. The comedian, who was also a leading actor, major say, gave a most vivid account of the latest news, and soon the professor forgot all about Frabado's prophecy. The actor finished the stories by leaning towards the professor and saying, "My dear friend, you absolutely must come to the theater with us this evening. Tonight is the premiere of a play in which I happen to have the main role. As a critic, you must not miss it under any circumstances." After two glasses of wine, the professor was mildly intoxicated and accepted the invitation by nodding his head. He quickly had something prepared for supper, which pleased the cheerful company very much. Then the time came when they set out. Two big taxis were called to take the happy lot to the theater, where the professor had his own box. The opening night was a grand success, and the professor waited with his friends in the foyer for the leading actor to appear. When the star finally arrived, everyone gave him their hearty congratulations, and the professor promised to write a very favorable critique. A few more actors joined them, and the whole troupe went to a wine tavern to celebrate the play's success. As the actors had another performance the next day, the company gradually dissolved around 11:30. The leading actor said goodbye to the professor at the door. "Good night. Why not take a taxi? You will get home quickly." But it was a Saturday night and the clubs were rather busy. There was not a taxi in sight. Because he had been drinking, the professor decided to get some fresh air by walking part of the way home. The traffic on the main street was still heavy, so he turned down a side street which seemed less frequented. He had enough excitement for one day. Music filled his ears from the half-open windows of the pubs and nightclubs as he strolled along, completely absorbed in thought. Suddenly, there was a commotion near one of the taverns. A number of men and women were standing together in a group. Curious, the professor approached them and realized that two young men, obviously drunk, had insulted each other and were beginning to fight. Unfortunately, the professor felt compelled to call out to the two men, telling them to go home and not fight in the streets. Everything changed at once. The two drunks stopped fighting. One of them began to insult the professor, who in turn reacted with harsh words. One of the ruffians moved in on him threateningly. Professor gave the other a slap just as his attacker grabbed him. With that, a commotion ensued. Everyone shouted, and then the second ruffian turned towards him. Professor could see that he did not have a chance, so he hastily pushed himself through the crowd and ran away. The man he had hit was eager for revenge, and taking a knife out of his pocket, ran after the professor, cursing at the top of his voice. Gasping for air, Professor turned into a busier street, hoping to find a policeman there. My God, where are they when you need them? He was running for his life, but his assailant was gradually gaining on him. By now, he was almost exhausted. As he turned the corner at the Pulver Tower, Frabido suddenly stood in his way. "Help me," the professor cried out, panting heavily, his eyes filled with fear. "They want to murder me." Frabido gently pushed the professor aside. "Stop running and do not be afraid," he said. He said that kindly. Then he calmly stepped in front of the approaching ruffian, who suddenly seemed paralyzed, the knife still in his hand. Then he turned, cursing, and disappeared around the next corner. Frabido had changed the situation to the professor's advantage with the use of a Kabbalistic word. Frabido then turned to the professor, whose head by now had cleared, but whose limbs were still filled with fear. He was stuttering slightly as he said to Frabido, "If you had not turned up, I would be a corpse by now. I'll be dead." Frabido patted his shoulder and, pointing to his watch, said, "My dear professor, you still do not seem to be quite the master of your faith, for otherwise you would not be here at this hour. Things have turned out as I predicted. I hope you are now convinced that one cannot be master of his faith if he's still unable to control all his circumstances and lead them in the direction he chooses. And you will now realize that one must achieve what is called magical equilibrium, spiritual equilibrium, in order to accomplish this." The professor realized he had been beaten. He apologized for having been a fool, naming his self-conceit as the culprit, his ego. Frabido led him to a busier street and invited him for a cup of coffee to calm his nerves. They stepped into a restaurant. A gypsy band was entertaining the guests, but Frabido took the professor to a quiet table in a corner. Frabido's self-assurance quieted the professor, and he soon regained his customary self-confidence. Now he wanted details, and while they were having their coffee, Frabido told him he has foreseen this event in the Akasha. It would have been possible for Frabido to turn up at the moment of the fight, but that would have been somewhat less convincing. "How long did you wait at the Pulver Tower?" the professor asked. "Only about 5 minutes," Frabido replied, "for I was able to follow you with my spiritual eye, and I therefore knew where to meet you." Professor G was full of admiration over these faithful connections. He asked Frabido many questions that night, which Frabido answered in great detail. At last, the two night owls ventured forth, and promising to meet again the following night, they took a cab home. I hope we have learned that there are certain things that are predetermined for us. We can't escape it. But for us to control our destiny, we must attain a level. And even those who attain that level, if it's what God has chosen, just like God said, "Before you were born, before you were even conceived in your mother's womb, I know you. I have had a plan for you." So we should. The first order of things is connect to God at all times. And ask that the Spirit of God will guide our ways, karma or no karma, and that we will always surrender to God, because only God can determine our fate, and only God can override the law of karma. May we all be blessed. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you.